Johnny, you should just do it like, you've never seen videos of Drake in the booth with the phone? Just do it like, you could just do the fan questions like Drake in the booth. Just be like, Stephanie from Texas wants to know,
that is,
you know, cats or dogs, what's your...
Buys breakfast.
Day one.
Mike, introduce.
Listen.
Because I'm going to cry.
Listen. You got that guy right here. Listen. You know, last season I kind of did him dirty. I called him the Global Ghost, International Snitching or whatever. But we got the guy, Mecca, a.k.a., well, Daniel Sinjata, a.k.a. Mecca. A.k.a. Mecca. We got Daniel.
That's great. Clap, you mother. We are graced with his presence.
We got Daniel in this mother. Man, the crew is here with the boy, man.
Yeah, man, this is crazy.
I'm so happy to have you because, honestly, did we not have one scene together season two?
No, we did not.
But I think we were
so close.
We were technically in a driving sequence together, but we were in separate cars.
Right, so, I mean, that
doesn't really count.
Right, we had never, like, ever even came, I think, not even for table reads or anything.
No. I mean, you came and said hello to me that
day.
You
know, I have to tell that story.
Because we never have any.
I have to tell that story.
Okay, you knocked on my trailer.
So I am a massive Rescue Me fan. One of my favorite shows. Such a good show. So when I heard you were coming on Ghost for season two, I was like, oh my God, no way. Like, I gotta go meet him. So
now he definitely told me that. He's like, yo, bro, he's on the set. I gotta go meet him. Literally right before he went to go.
So Mike had went home, and I'm sitting in my trailer with LaToya, who plays Diana Tejada, and I heard your voice walk by and your trailer close. And I'm like, oh my God, like, he's in the trailer. Like, I'm like, I'm just gonna... Because, like, we've been on the show for a while. Like, I'm going to go just introduce him, you know, welcome to the family, all this stuff. And I don't know if you were on an important phone call or business call, but
so
I went and knocked on your trailer, and I was like, hey, man, I just want to say, like, big fan, like, so excited to have you, you know, on the show this season. Like, I love your work. And you're like, oh, thanks, man, cool. And I was like,
oh, man.
Yeah, we're excited. And he's like, yeah, cool. And I'm like, all right, I'll talk to you later. And I went back to the trailer to Toya, and I was like, it didn't go well.
In my defense, Toya was there. Maybe I was caught off guard by her, because she's so stunning.
Right.
Like, I got tongue-tied. I couldn't respond to your thing. That's crazy.
Yeah, that was the first time we ever met. But so we have since become extremely close friends, and we talk every day. So,
My man.
I'm excited to have you. So, yeah, let's kind of go on your journey and talk about, you know, where you started to obviously now.
Yeah. I got to just jump into getting on your show. That's like, we could go back to like, well, it all began when I was a child.
I had a knack for performing.
I had a knack. I was a people person. It was weird because my father had just passed away, and I was coming off of, like, not the best period of my career, you know, like couch surfing with my sister for a little bit, waiting for something to happen. And when my dad passes away, we had to make a 5-hour drive to upstate New York in order to, like, clear out, you know, the belongings from his apartment, or I'm sorry, but his house. And while we're up there doing that, these were like 3-day-at-a-time trips, multiples. And during one of them, my people call me and they're like, yeah, you know, Courtney Kemp and stars. And I was like, get out of here. Not you, Powerbook 2 Ghost. They were like, yeah. They were like, you know, she heard basically what she told us is that how would Daniel like to play a motherfucker of a role? Mm-hmm. To, you know, transformational, all this kind of stuff. And so I get on the phone with Courtney.
Of a role for sure.
Yeah, it was a crazy role.
That
right?
offer call is so much better than you have an audition.
Oh, the offer call is crazy.
Right.
But then first the creative conversation with Courtney.
Right.
So I was just like, wow, because this kind of stuff wasn't happening for me at that time. And she was like, yeah, Daniel, you know, I thought about you from the beginning. You know, you're the person that I want to play this role. You know, how would you feel about playing it? I was like, first of all, yes. You know what I mean? Like, what downside is there for me? But it was momentous for me, man. I had such a good time on your show. To go back a little further, I was a huge fan of the original Power Mothership show. Mm-hmm. So I was on this show. I had broken my foot. And I'm sitting in a non-weight-bearing cast on my couch for like 8 weeks. And I'm just looking on Apple TV.
How did you break your foot?
I was shooting a scene where I was running through the forest, and what happened was I wasn't paying it. There was a little rock that was sticking out of the ground, and my foot just landed at an awkward angle, and I felt it go. I was like,
so you broke it on set?
I broke it on set.
What were you shooting?
It was where? This was in South Florida. It was Graceland.
No, oh, right.
And we had to take a hiatus. I had to show up to set on the crutches. They have to come out and say, can you work? You have to say no. Then they say, okay, we're officially shut down. Damn. And the crew no longer has it. Like, this. Yeah, it's like we're just on break, and I felt terrible because of that. But I'm sitting there watching like World Cup stuff, I'm bored, and I come across this a face that I recognize, which was Omari's. Mm. So back in the day when I was living in LA previously, Omari used to bump into me at random. We'd bump into each other at like restaurants, clubs, and he would always come up to me and be like, Daniel. And I was like, how do you even know my name? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know, and I just remember him from that. And when I was like, he was always a good dude. And so, man, you know, to cheer, you know, the fact that this is happening for him, I was like, man, damn, let me check out the show. And as soon as it started, this is a big risk. I was like, oh, this shit looks so sexy. And then it's so gangster. And I was like, oh my God, I wish I could be on a show like that. Mm. Fast forward 3 years, 4 years, maybe even five. And, you know, no, more than that. Six, mm-hmm. seven, eight, sorry. I'm an actor, that's why I suck at math. Yeah, to get this call was just kind of mind-blowing, man. And it was also one of the first times in my career that I was ever cast as a black man, specifically. Right. Right. And I can't tell you how much that me, I went to FAMU, mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm black. Right. And they're like, you know, and I'm either not black enough or I'm not white enough. And so I end up being like this ambiguously, you know, whatever, ethnically ambiguous character, you know, character time and time again. But with this, it was Mecca. And I was just like, man, now when I go to certain neighborhoods, I get love. But right. before, right. I usually...
Side note on this thing. We could cut this if you don't want this in here. But what? My friend Nina Parker, she's an Entertainment Tonight host. She was at dinner like a couple nights ago. And she said it was a table you with like a couple white people. And she heard the N-word come from the table. And she turned around and she said, hold on. And you turned around and looked at her and said, I'm black.
That is crazy. I know the exact table. So this is what's happening. Yeah. Bro.
She texted me because I posted that be real of us at the party at the house on Saturday.
Yes. So this is the context of that particular moment. I remember this moment exactly. So I'm sitting there, we're talking about, it's a table full of friends, and we're talking about why, you know, white racial slurs do not compare,
right,
in terms of the historical relevance to the N-word.
Right.
And in the context of the conversation, I think I used both words. And I remember as soon as the N-word came out, I saw this sister turn like, this. I was like, no. Yeah, what we're talking about is why you shouldn't use it. You know, I mean, but I guess in the context, I used the word. But I mean, you know. That was
a side note of what you were saying. Like, yeah, a lot of people are like, you know, you don't get cast as a black man a lot of times
because
ethnically ambiguous.
I think in the beginning of my career, I played Langston Hughes in a independent film called Brother to Brother. Mm-hmm. Anthony Mackie was in that. That was at the start of his career, started both of our careers, and that probably is the only time.
That's crazy.
Yeah. No, it's always been like, you know, even for Graceland, the show where I broke my foot, they mm-hmm. were imagining it like a guy like you, like, or like a, not you, I would think like a Matt McConaughey-esque, plays drums on the beach, right. Wild hair, you know, dude, white man surfer, right. White guy surfer. And my people were like, what about Daniel Sinjata? And they were like, no. And then we're gonna have to see him do it.
Right.
So, but the first thing was a test, and I went in there and I was stealing stuff from Denzel and Training Day. You know,
how many seasons did that go?
Only three.
It's crazy because so many of the fan questions were about Graceland on the Who Has It podcast.
Oh, that's crazy.
And we were at dinner the other night, and two people came up to me and were like, oh, I love Graceland. I can't believe that got canceled. So that show had a lot of love. I don't know why it didn't keep going.
Yeah, I don't understand it, man. I mean, I'm a one-trick pony. I want to get like you guys. Like, I don't understand the producing aspect of the business that I'm in. I'm just an actor.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And so, like, there are decisions that come down from conflicts between studios and networks.
Right.
I believe it had something to do with NBC Universal and Fox, and I don't know which was the parent umbrella company, they wanted everything under their umbrella to be uniform.
Yeah.
If it was Fox, they wanted everything Fox. If it was NBC Universal, I think they wanted NBC Universal, and we got
complex.
It's kind of what's happening with HBO Max right now. A lot of they're canceling like most of their shows.
Really?
And some of these shows are hit shows, but they don't want to put any more money into it. Yeah, it's a really complex business. But to go back, like, you were on a show for... How long was Rescue Me? Nine seasons?
Seven
seasons. And then you were on Graceland for three seasons.
Yep.
And then you just said you were couch surfing and you were looking for, like, people don't understand. They think you're on a show for 7-8 years and they go, they're 100 millionaire, they're celebrities, they're this and that. Like, no, we're actors just looking for the next job to, you know, be able to continue to
do it. We unemployed until we get the next role.
No, you're like, totally unemployed when you're not working. Right? Unless you're a working actor, you are not an actor.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, literally. You kind of are, but right, you're not really.
Until you're working.
Yeah, people think it is weird how that works. I think it's partially a factor of the nature of the culture of celebrity. It's meant to magnify, you know, a certain perception, right, of people to the point where, you know, they were to wonder, you know, what's it really like? They would think that we're all millionaires, right, and we don't have any problems.
Right.
But my mind goes to Lisa Left Eye Lopez on VH1, where she was like, let me tell you how a multi-platinum selling hip-hop artist can be broke.
Right.
And she breaks it down how TLC was basically making like $80,000, you know, when they divided all the money and the recoupable expenses.
Naturi,
and stuff.
Naturi came on and was
That's
talking
correct.
About that, right?
That's correct. That's correct.
She was on,
3LW. Oh, I haven't seen that. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it was a group.
Oh, I thought it was a show.
You know, and she was talking about how like she was broke after. Mm-hmm. It's like crazy, mm-hmm, how people don't really understand how that works.
Well, I mean, how that translates to us, and I don't know if you guys have broken this down before. It's like, you know, when you hear Denzel Washington gets $20 million for a film, mm-hmm, he's taking home 7.5.
Right.
So that means if a person's making $100,000, what they're really bringing home is like $40,000, right, $45,000. But it's still $40,000.
Manager, right, taxes.
Right.
Oh, and this was one of the reasons why, if you guys thought Omari was bullshitting in terms of like he needed a little help in order to continue doing Power, I think, mm-hmm, and then this is public knowledge,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And 50 like broke him off, right, so that he, you know, because he's making $150,000 an episode. No, right, he's not.
Right.
And then you got to think about, did he have kids?
Right.
I don't know, but I mean, like, he's probably had to take care of people, and yes, bro, it gets tight.
Yeah, and then people also don't realize that like there's a lot to pay for to keep up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes,
you gotta, when you go to premieres and events, like the clothing is expensive. You got to, mm-hmm, get a stylist. You got to get makeup. A lot of times the studio is not paying for that. So
right,
people don't realize
tough,
like how
that glitter ain't gold, man.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a thing. It's kind of a thing.
Right.
So, I mean, we all can't be Michael Rainey Jr. Been doing it since he left the womb.
I love saying that.
Yeah.
What was your big first break that you got?
Take Me Out.
That was on Broadway.
Yeah, that was a Broadway play.
Right.
We did the play for 2 years, but it was weird, man. So, like, I had a small recurring role on Law & Order SVU.
Nice.
Where I was, like, every 3 episodes, I did, like, a drive-by scene as, like, the lab tech guy who didn't even have a name. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, you just see me occasionally. That was paying the rent. Then I booked one episode of Sex and the City. And around that time, I can't remember the order of operations, just one episode, but it was, like, the season premiere of the 4th season.
Right.
So it was, like, right after 9/11, and the show had just caught in, like, you know, it had just become, like, a major sensation, because Sex and the City took a little while to catch on. Mm-hmm. But somewhere in there, I get Take Me Out, and it's the fact that people see you a little bit here, and they see you a little bit there, and then like, oh, the guy's, you know, he's off Broadway, started off Broadway, then, oh, now he's on Broadway. And it creates, like, I won't say a feeding frenzy, but it creates a perception,
right,
that the person is everywhere. And in the context of the industry, they say work begets work. And so then from there, shit started.
How was Broadway? What was that like?
It was crazy, man, because, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the show, but it's about a baseball player who comes out of the closet. And it's the kind of guy that you would be like a Barry Bonds, or I don't know, like somebody that you would just never, ever think. And he's like, yeah, I like men, I'm gay, and let's just keep it pushing.
Right.
So, I'm sorry, the context of that, I forgot about what your question was.
How was it on Broadway?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
what was
so,
it like?
In the context of that,
baseline question.
Very, come on, focus. We should do a Rogan and spark one up. No, I'm kidding. we had to be naked. So there was, you know, there was nudity on stage. And that was, I was looking at the context of the play, and I was like, this is such a well-written play. It's the kind of play that you had to rise to the level of the writing, not take bad writing and make it good.
Right.
And so I was like, wow, this would be something, this would be a challenge. And then I saw that nudity, and I was like, damn,
right,
full frontal nudity.
Your piece was out?
Dude. For 1,200 people per show 8 times
oh
a week.
Oh, my God. My shit is not big enough to
do
that.
Stop.
Yeah, not big
you know,
to do
there
that.
Were dudes that were fluffing. There were dudes that did fluff.
Yeah,
they did.
I fucking be backstage like, all right, come on, man.
Yeah, come on, daddy. Yeah.
So did you
grow for me? Just a little bit.
Did you have, like, comps and have people come and watch you and, like, your... all that stuff, like, your family coming?
Yeah, there were some members of my family that, like, my daughter was not going to see that.
Yeah, right.
I was not going to have her. Actually, she came to the show, but I had her escorted out every time there was going to be nudity on stage.
Oh, okay, all right.
Because she was
too. Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was my, I would say that was my big break, because that, like, you know, a lot of things started rolling after that. Rescue Me came after that.
Yeah.
You know
what, so what was that audition process like? Like, because Dennis Leary, notoriously wild man.
Yeah.
I want to hear, like, what happened in the room? How did you get the call? Like, all that stuff.
It's a short story, really. I mean, the audition came as most auditions do. Your agent calls and says, hey, you know, got a script. We want you to read for interest. You know, pending your, you know, pending interest, you can go on tape Wednesday at 2 o'clock, whatever. So I'm reading this. It's Rescue Me, obviously. Role of Franco Rivera. I prepare my stuff. I make all my choices, psychological gestures in the mirror and stuff.
Yeah. Was it a black character or it was?
No, he's Puerto Rican. He was New Eurekan. So technically, if you want to go far enough back.
Right. Yes. I just didn't know if it started as a black character and then it became Puerto Rican.
Nope. No, he was always Puerto Rican from the start. I was glad there was no Spanish requirement. He was New Eurekan, so right. Like, you know, he's like New York kind of guy. Right. And yeah, man, I went in there and I blew it. I blew it. You know what I mean? Just
was Dennis in the room?
Yes. Him and Peter Tolan were both in the room. Peter Tolan, Larry Sandler show, multiple Emmy winning, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I sucked and I stank up the room and I was watching myself melt down. The lights got real hot. I start sweating and shit. I'm like fidgeting and acting weird. And I leave the room and I was like, that was terrible. So I get in the elevator. On the way down, I call my agent, and this is the only time in my career that I've ever done this. I was like, Mark, you have got to get me back in that room.
Right.
I said, I fucked that up and I know who this guy is. I was nervous and I just need to get back in that room. He got me back in the room. I booked the job. Fast forward to Dennis saying, if you had not come back in that room, you were not getting that job. He said, no, your self-awareness and your intuition was correct. You were terrible. He said, but you came back in the room and I did the thing that time.
So guys, we're going to take a break from the episode and we're going to talk to you real quick about men's health. Obviously, I'm in the new studio. Michael's not here. I came in today to talk to you about our friends at Blue Chew. So did you know that 1 in 10 men have ED? And 1 in 2 men on the crew have it as well, but we're not gonna talk about that. It's all about confidence, right? And when it's time, you know, to do the business, sometimes stress, anxiety, or a bad day can affect your performance and ruin the mood, the fun, everything for both of you, and nobody wants that. BlueChew.com is coming to you to the rescue. It's a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at the fraction of the cost. So listen. Blue Chew's tablets help men achieve their full potential. You guys know I like my drive-by ads. Full potential in the bedroom and combat all forms of ED. Because BlueChew.com is an online prescription service, there are no visits to the doctor's office. There are no waiting in line at the pharmacy. You don't get to go in there to get laundry detergent and also a little assistance in the bedroom. You can do that discreetly. And it comes to your door in a discreet package. You know what I mean? The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com and consult with one of their licensed medical providers. They're licensed. It's not just some random guy in a van that's selling you pills. You know what I mean? I've done that before. BlueChew.com, baby. You'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, online. BlueChew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. No pun intended. Strength, width, length. You got it. Don't like swallowing pills? No problem here. Blue Chew's tablets are chewable, or you can just throw it in the protein shake in the morning like I do to get the day going. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code CREW at checkout. I don't know why I'm yelling at you like I'm Gary Vee. Just pay $5 in shipping. That's it. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code CREW to receive your first month free and some assistance, baby. Dave, are they putting the Blue Chew in my car? Oh, we're still rolling? All right, BlueChew.com, promo code CREW. Put in my trunk. Back to the episode. Mike, do you have any, like, crazy audition stories where you, like, fucked up or, like, did anything that you remember?
Bro, I haven't, like, in-person auditioned.
Well, we all haven't, like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
years,
I don't even... I remember being really, really young. I don't know what this was for, but it was an audition where I was like, I didn't even want to go. Like, you feel me? And like, I was just like, I'm gonna go anyway, whatever. And like, I kind of had everything off book. You feel me? Like, I had it. And then once I got there, like, we start. I have the first line, and I'm just there, just silent. I'm like.
Not because you didn't know it, though. You said you had it.
Yeah, like, I knew I had it, but, like, I guess in that instant, I forgot I had the first line.
Oh, gotcha.
So I was just there. I was just like, I just blinked. And then I'm like, and then we just reset. And then, like, we do the audition or whatever. But I feel like, I don't remember how it went. But, it was just a weird moment.
How old were you, like, 15 or 16?
Yeah, I was probably, like, yeah. I was probably, like, 14. Yeah. Probably.
For those of you that don't know, the kid has a ridiculous memory.
Yeah.
Some of it, memorizing lines, like some, I believe, because people ask me, like, how do you guys do it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that you do get better with over time.
And so, and
however,
have so
you.
Many different processes, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wondered, what do you do? Because you know what
he
don't
does?
Understand.
You know what he does?
He gets rewrites the day of, the night before, right. Monologues, the stuff he has to do at the university, in the right. classroom. That's, you know, complicated intellectual argument right. and shit.
Eight
but spoken
eight
like
syllable
casually.
Words.
Yeah, dude.
You want to know what he does?
What does he do?
He gets a set and he'll have like this much, and then I'll have like a response, and then I'll have like this much, and I'll go, Mike, did you read the scene? He goes, no, what are we doing today? And he'll look at it and he'll go, all right, we'll hit it on set. He'll literally go like this. Okay, cool. All right, let's do it. And he'll say the whole thing, and my one line is like, okay, bet. And I'm like, fuck, what's my line?
unless crazy Gianni memory. Was, if that's not hyperbole to make a point, that means you got a photographic memory, bro.
Yeah.
And that's rare, man.
Yeah, it's like a photographic memory. And then, like, my thing is, too, like, it's, like, a lot easier for me to memorize it, like, if I read it with someone. Like, mm-hmm. like I could read it myself, like, 5-6 times. I'll remember it, but, like, it would still kind of be, like, a little blurry in my mind. But, like, mm-hmm. I read it 2-3 times with G, yeah. like, it's like this.
And obviously I was being funny for the thing. But
yeah, okay. But basically.
When we get to set, we'll just read to each other. But, right. like, I need to read it the night before.
Uh-huh.
I need to, you know. But yeah. he's very good at it's crazy.
Yeah, I play mine in headphones. Like, I'll read it. You know what I mean? Then I'll try to do the look down, like, read their lines, see if you can repeat it. Uh-huh. And then I'll just put it into a voice memo. And literally while I'm at the gym, when I'm on my way to work,
right.
you know. And it eventually gets there, mm-hmm. you know.
Right. Like my thing, like, with the reading, like, back and forth, I look at, like, his line as a cue for my next line. So, like,
right.
I know what he says, so I'm like, oh, this is what I say after.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, his lines are, like, cues for my line.
Yeah.
That's kind of makes it easier for me.
Yeah, it is crazy. It kind of speaks to what you were saying about how everybody kind of has their own process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To everything, even when it comes to, like, memorizing yeah. lines.
The good thing about being on set is that if you fuck up, they just go, okay, let's take it back. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're on the show for a while, if you're, like, a guest star and you're fucking up a lot, they're like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah,
like, you better come prepared.
You might get fired.
But if you've been on the show for fucking 10 years, they can give you a couple, you know, mulligans.
Yeah.
But when you go in for an audition, you got to have that
shit. Oh, yeah,
shit.
No, no.
You do.
Because you
rip.
Can't stop.
Yeah, you do. Rip.
You can't stop. It's
no.
it fucks up the whole audition if you're like, wait, hold on, let me go back.
I know.
They're like, oh, shit, we got to restart.
You know what's weird about that, though, Gianni?
I actually did that on my last read. This week
you did what? You stopped and
yeah. I blinked like the second scene we did, and I was like, hey, let me just take that back from
yeah.
It
but
felt
again,
crazy. I was like,
you actually could probably do that. The you know, most actors would probably you just lost the job. You just lost the job, son. You know what's weird about that though? You would think the casting directors and producers would be able to, they know how it goes on set. That mm-hmm. Gianni, that literally what the audience sees as the final product might be a splicing together of two different takes.
Right.
So if an actor messes up in an audition, just let him rewind and just let him reset
right.
and
because
stay in the moment. Maybe even give them line because that's
literally the process
that's
you're
going
to be
going
through.
Right.
Yeah, that's the environment you're going to be in.
100%.
In it. So right. it's like, damn, the audition conditions are
kind of
tough for us, bro.
But, and as you were saying earlier, though, it's not like that now because most of us are self-taping.
Yeah,
self-taping. So the advantage of the self-tape is that you could take 4 hours to put your audition together.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me, the disadvantage is you don't have direction.
Right.
So mm-hmm. you're guessing at what they want.
Right.
And oftentimes...
And that's, and then, that, but that like, this is where, like, having, like, you know, your friends around you, like, that are in the same, like, profession as you, they could come and, you know, give you input, like, oh, I think you should, you know, do it like this.
Yeah.
Obviously, they don't know exactly where the writer or director is coming from with every character, like, exactly what they want out of it, but, you know, like, me, like, G helped me with my reading this week. He was like, I think you should play like this, and I did exactly that, and got some good feedback. Thank you, man.
So you guys, you do have room in the mansion to do auditions?
Yeah, we found.
I'm really happy about that. I was worried. You know what I'm saying?
We found a small little nook and cranny to get it done.
Yeah, they're struggling artists. You know what though? Not to make too much of a left turn, I really respect the hustle. Ice Cube, Supreme Hustle, is one of my favorite songs. What you guys are doing is like, it's setting a bar for, like, it's inspirational. It sets a bar for, like, other people in similar positions to do their own version of the same thing. You guys got the merch going, which, by the way, I do hope you have an extra large.
Yeah, we'll get you one on the way out. I think we have some here. We'll get you one on the way out.
Yeah. Now I do want a piece of merch.
Yeah, please cop that merch right now, thecrewhasit.shop.
Do it.
Quick little plug here.
Do it.
But that goes to, like, what we were saying, like, as actors, like, we're...
Yeah. Gang.
Bet. But yeah, like, as artists, like, as actors, like, we're unemployed until we're employed. Like, right now, we're on hiatus, so, like, we're not filming, we're not doing shit, so we gotta have other shit, you know, to work on.
Yeah, that's like a production company and a hit podcast.
Right.
What'd you guys say? It's the number one what podcast?
It was the number one TV and film podcast.
TV and film podcast.
On Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 99% of our views are on YouTube.
Wow, yeah. Wow.
So, it puts into perspective.
Shout out to Money Lion. Right. Y'all ain't lying. Y'all got money.
But here's the thing. Most actors, like, I know there was an article that went viral a couple weeks ago, Sydney Sweeney from Euphoria.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it?
Who is
Sydney? She's a white girl. She was also...
In Euphoria. Whatever character she is. But yeah, I probably know who she is. Yeah.
So she basically said, I can't afford to take 6 months off of work.
Yeah.
So people took it as, oh, no one can afford to take 6 months off of work. Obviously, like, you're not special. And what she meant was... I'm on hiatus. I have to book another job to get paid for 6 months.
That's right.
When I'm not filming Euphoria.
That's right.
But as always they do on Twitter, they run with, she said that she wants to take 6 months off to go vacation. No, she needs to get another job to keep up with it until Euphoria comes back so she can get paid per episode. Now, and they also were talking about her salary and how much she makes per episode, which we just touched on. Your manager, agent, all this gets 10%. She also has to go to these Met galas and this and that, and they're not paying you for this.
Right.
Maybe she's doing some type of brand deals which helps this and that, but
she might be coming out of pocket for her outfit for the Met Gala, which isn't, you can't just wear Levi's and a t-shirt.
And
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You wear it one time and you can never wear it again.
You can never wear it again.
And that shit's probably 3-4 bands.
Yeah.
So that's why me and Micah were like, listen, you know, God forbid a pandemic happened. God forbid that happens.
Right.
We can always come in this podcast studio, always talk to artists or just ourselves and recap old episodes, recap new episodes, and do what we love and talk about our craft and still make money. We're not at the whim of a studio to say, you can work. Which I love about the way the industry is changing, where it's more in the artist's hands. Now, obviously, like, Power and stuff like that, like, those jobs are at the whim of other people. But now with our TikToks, now with this... Now with which follow me
there's
on TikTok,
so many lanes
to get a million.
Get Gianni to a million.
There's so many lanes to, like, produce your own content and make your own stuff. The vlog, please subscribe to Where's 22 channel.
Yeah.
So that's what I love about, that was just one big commercial.
No.
But that's what I just love about what we can do now as artists and actors.
Yeah, somebody said it in too many syllables. It was like the democratization of the media. But like the fact that you can take it into your own hands, put your own thing together. You know, and I don't want to sell pipe dreams to anybody. You're not just going to put some podcast together at home and it's not going to be this. These guys are like, there was timing. They had other things going on. But taking the time to think about that, to think about the business in that way, having the foresight to know that you want more creative control and control over when and how you get your bread.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Not just like when they say you could come to set.
Right.
That's huge, man. That's huge. That's huge.
I do love it. And obviously me and Michael are going to be producing and, you know, doing stuff for a long time that you're going to be leads and stars of.
Hey, man. I still got it, baby.
I just love the way that the industry is going and stuff like that. We need to get you on Instagram, man. You need to get on Instagram. You have a Finsta.
Well,
he has a Finsta that I'm on, which we're never going to release
That's on the QT.
But me and Mike have Finstas too. They ain't never getting
out. You know, unfortunately, in today's climate, you actually have to. I want to go back to what you said. What was her name from Twitter? About the story you were just telling me about. She said she wants 6 months off a year.
Yeah, said she wanted to take six months off.
Yeah, this is the thing. She's lucky that that's what she said.
She didn't want to take 6 months off. She needed to book another job during her hiatus.
Right. So however you interpret that, it's a relatively innocuous thing. The worst thing that you could say is that she's an entitled, like, blah, blah. She wants more money and more time off. Mm. And that would be a misinterpretation of what she actually said.
Right.
If you actually take the time to put together what she actually said, it's more understandable.
Right.
But I'm saying, like, let's say she had said something else. One of the reasons why I don't mess with social media is that you can't just you can't, there's things that you can't say, and sometimes you don't know what you can't say.
Right.
And once you said it, it's, you can't take it
it's
back.
Too late.
And now your ass is canceled.
Right.
And I mean, and but it's happened to a bunch of people recently. Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're in a good place now where a lot of the initial done is kind of over with, and it's more like, but we are still in that
you still
culture.
Have, you gotta be, there's gotta be aware of landmines. You can't like offend people. You know what I mean? It's like,
since
when do we have such thin skin? Like, you can't hurt my feelings? Really?
Censorship is really insane.
Yeah, man.
Bro, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's feelings over facts right now.
Yeah. However, I would not, it is feelings over facts.
Right.
It really is. Yeah, people are out of,
yo, that is a fact, though.
Yeah.
That's why the world's so fake, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
But I don't know. I agree. Like, sometimes I'll post some, like, my publicist watches my you know, she'll watch my stories
she'll
and she'll
be shaking every time.
What is happening? I'm like, I'm just trying to make people laugh. Like,
right.
I just want to make, like, that's who I am. I'm an entertainer. Like, some of the stuff I say with them, if Yao probably records everything and vlogs it, if some of that footage got out, I'd be done.
Yeah.
But I'm really just trying
like
to...
Like me at the restaurant the other night.
Right.
Canceled by my own sister. Like, no.
Right.
Yeah.
But really, it does come from a good place. I'm like, I'm just trying to make everyone have a good time. Like, I don't want to offend anyone, you know? Like, I guess it
comes off that way. There's always, even when you're pretending to be serious, people know better than to take what you say too seriously.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the messed up thing, piggyback on what we were saying, is that right now we live in a day and an age where somebody just decides that they didn't like what you said,
right.
And they have a little cadre of social justice warriors online.
Right.
They can hurt you.
They round up the troops.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
But I would never let.
Y'all leave me
I would
alone.
Never let
I love
what
everybody.
I just. What'd you say, Mike?
I said, y'all leave me alone. I love everybody.
Hey, man, that's the best way to be.
You feel me?
I would never let what I just expressed stop me, though. Like, I would want to wait until I'm number one on a call sheet or a series regular on a show that's as popular as yours. Then I would launch the blue check marks, if I could ever hope for that.
Wait. Let's dive into Echoes on Netflix, which is number one on Netflix right now.
It's a limited series, though. You guys got an ongoing... I would not launch all my social media based on Echoes.
Right. I didn't finish it. I watched the first
two
episodes.
You're strategic. I like that.
Right.
I would want to wait till I got something ongoing.
Right. I didn't watch the first...
But number one
first...
is tough, though. Number one on Netflix.
Super,
and there's a lot of shit on Netflix.
Not to spoil it, do you die in it? Or
no.
So it could potentially be picked up for another
Black
season?
Man lives through this whole thing.
this is not a 2004
this is not,
movie.
Yeah, this is not a... Yeah. No, I lived through the whole thing. It's Michelle Monaghan, who actually plays twins. It's very... degree of difficulty in terms of what knowing how we make the donuts, solid 9. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard. She's playing two identical twin sisters.
It's one actress playing twin sisters.
Oh,
my God.
And the twin sisters, a short synopsis of the plot is that the twin sisters live across the country and switch between two husbands every 6 months to a year and think that the husbands don't know. And turns out that, you know, my character actually does know, and then somebody dies, and it's a thing. So,
sounds mixy.
Obviously, the sisters have scenes together at some point.
Yeah, they do. They green screened it, and they had a stand in a body double for
that. Yeah, so can you explain to the listeners like how they get that done? Because some people are like, wait, they're both there?
Yeah, no, I would have, I hope I explain it in an easy to understand way, because I'm not good with the technology. I just stand on my mark and stand on my line. Is this my light? Michelle would come on set and we would shoot every scene that both sisters were in simultaneously. If they were in any of the same frames, we got to shoot all those frames or all those scenes twice.
Right.
So we shoot one with her as Lenny and with her as Gina. And when she's Gina, her stand-in plays Lenny. Mm-hmm. And when she's Lenny, her stand-in plays Gina. Yeah. And some of that goes in front of a green screen, and then they'd work the magic in post-production, and it's seamless. You would never know
that
they're
crazy,
not literally kissing each other or looking each other dead in the eye. It's the weirdest thing.
That's insane what they can do now.
And then, like, on top of, like, lines and everything, like, remembering lines, and then, like, they're obviously, like, two different people, so, like, that's actually crazy.
Yeah, one of them had a southern accent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
did they speak
hard.
Differently? Like, mm-hmm. that's tough.
Then it's Matt Bomer. Matt Bomer was the star of not Suits. It's White Collar.
White Collar.
I should know that.
I like him.
Well, yeah, he's awesome. He's great.
Yeah.
And then me. And so, yeah, man, it was a good time.
What's your favorite thing you've ever done? Here's the thing. We're so close with Daniel and each other. This could be a conversation for 4 hours.
Yeah, literally.
I'm gonna try and get some power fan questions out here, and like, because everyone keeps asking. They wanted Daniel on the podcast, but there was specific stuff that they're asking. So I'm gonna say we will get to some power stuff. I just love this man more than anything.
Oh man,
so,
I love you guys.
But
too.
Yeah, so what was your favorite thing you've ever done?
You're gonna think I'm saying this just because I'm on your podcast, but it's I would say Power Book II Ghost and the character of Mecca is a dead heat between that and Paul Briggs from Graceland. Right. If Graceland would have gone on for 6 or 7 seasons, and we were all crushed, the actors on the show, the series regulars were like, oh my God, right, we had a good thing going. If that could have gone on for 6 and 7 seasons, I would probably put that in my number one spot, because that was my show.
Right.
I was like, it was me and Aaron Tveit were number 1 and 2.
Right.
I'd have to say what happened with Power, man.
Yeah.
For all the reasons that I said above, plus the dude, it's just the character, man. As soon as from the introduction, it's click, clack, get back. Wow. He's breaking legs. I was like, this motherfucker is a bad dude. Yeah. The bald head.
Did you decide that?
Courtney said, how do you feel about rocking a baldy? And by the way, can I tell you and your audience members how happy I am that my hair actually grew back? At my age, man, it's 6 months of shaving your head on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. I thought that it might not come back, but it was her idea, and it had the effect, I think, of like people. I had multiple friends and in the industry, and also family members, just say that when they first saw my character enter the screen, they didn't immediately know that it was me.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh shit, that's Daniel, or Daniel Sunjata.
Yeah.
That's the effect I wanted to have.
Yeah, Gabrielle Ryan from Force, she came to the party on Saturday, and she walked in, and like I was like introducing everyone, and she had a conversation and walked away, and she's like, who is that? And I was like, that's fucking Mecca from Ghost. And she's like, no, it wasn't. I was like, I didn't recognize him
without the baldy and the Just for Men and the beard. That right. was all.
Mecca got the legendary.
I should still be doing that. Gianni, when did you start acting? How old were you?
I moved to LA when I turned 19. I started like doing plays and stuff at around like 16, 17.
Okay.
But I moved to LA when I was 19 and started auditioning almost.
I wondered if you guys had in common the fact that you both grew up in the game. But that would be more so you, Michael, right?
Yeah, I grew up in this shit. I was...
Yeah, you did.
Been doing this for a long time. I feel like an old man every time I think about it, bro. Because, like, bro, when I think about it, bro, it's like, nah, bro, but when you think about it, like, to say I've been working for 13 years, maybe?
Probably longer.
Something like that, right?
Yeah, to be work like that shit sounds crazy, bro.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, sure.
It sounds crazy, bro. Working for 10 plus years sounds crazy to me,
man.
Just at this age.
And how old were you when you started?
I started when I not till I got out of college.
Right.
So, and that was graduate school. So I got out, I graduated from NYU in 1998. And then I started.
Did you do any type of like acting or anything at NYU?
Oh yeah.
Oh no. Did.
So at NYU, you're in class from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and then you're in rehearsal for whatever play you're in production for from 7 to 11. Dang. So you have no time to take a job. You got no time to barely wash your clothes. It's terrible.
I hear that NYU doesn't like when people work. I'm like, this is crazy.
They don't like when. That's an excellent observation. They don't like it when students that are in the conservatory, the 3-year training program, when they try to carve out space to do independent films while they're in school. They don't want you working while you're in school. Now, I understand generally where they're coming from. I think it's that they want you so focused on the curriculum that you get the absolute most out of it, and we're trying to teach you, wait, don't start acting yet. We're trying to teach you how to act. You might solidify some bad habits. Let us like go through the training program first. There's that. Well, I think that's, and they also, this is where I found fault with the program, is that there is one of the best graduate film programs in the world is NYU. That's where Spike Lee went to school there. You know, the list is endless. They should at least have they're in the same building, 721 Broadway. They got the grad film students and you got the grad acting students in the same building. Just have it as part of the curriculum that it's mandatory that you shoot 2 or 3 student films before before your
and
3 years or so.
And then you have connections.
Yeah.
That's actually
and you also understand what is going on a set. Even after I graduated from NYU, we had to go to set and be like, learn how to hit what hitting my mark was and how to do it. I had no practice doing these things. Didn't know how a set was run.
There was a lot of people who were in my acting class when I moved to LA.
Yeah.
That, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, because I didn't go to NYU or I didn't do any theater training.
Training,
first.
Right.
I went right into TV and film training.
Got you.
So a lot of people struggle booking jobs because they were trained to project and put on a show and perform. And then when they go in front of a camera, which is just real, a conversation one-on-one,
it's too much.
They're
too
performing
big.
And they're doing this. And the casting directors are like, that's not what we're looking
for.
So a lot of people that I was acting in acting class with that did 4, 5, 6 years of you know, Juilliard and mm-hmm. crazy training, mm-hmm. they don't work because they yeah. weren't trained correctly and yeah. in a way
yeah.
for TV and film.
No, not in a way. I mean, they weren't trained in a medium-specific right. sense. What they're doing probably does book them work in regional theaters right. off-Broadway, and they might even get to Broadway, maybe even win a Tony. You know who was the, oh, what was that show, The Rock? I'm forgetting his name. He was in jail. Then 7 years later, he went to Yale.
You're talking about Charles Dutton?
Charles Dutton.
Yes.
Charles
Dutton. I was in a movie with Charles Dutton.
Okay. So Charles
Damn,
Dutton.
Yeah, very, he was a fucking legend. He was in Love. He was in Love with me and Common.
He was in, okay.
Yeah, Dennis Haysbert. Yo, that shit was crazy. Yeah, Charles Dutton, yeah.
He was able to, Rock, yeah, to do that yeah. fine line. It was called The Rock, right? When Now when you say The Rock, it's like ubiquitous, synonymous with, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Yeah. But I was like, is that the right name? He was so big on camera, but it worked in the context of the character that he was playing.
Right.
I think that it's okay. I based my training theatrically and didn't decide to start training for on-camera work specifically because all of the people whose careers I admire, and in some instances, I'm ashamed to say, covet, all their training was all in the theater.
Right.
So whether it's Denzel or whoever, Marlon Brando, the guys that I like look up to, you do look like Marlon Brando a little bit. He does have a little.
I got to do that.
He's got a little swag. You got a little Brando swag.
I got to do that little Marlon.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So my point was that their foundation was in theatrical training for the theater, but then they learned through working with other famous acting teachers throughout history, like how to apply the method to on-camera work or what have you, how to calibrate for the camera, which basically this is acting for the camera right here.
Who were your inspirations growing up? Like,
Well, Brando was one of them. Like, one of the reasons why I became an actor was because of his performance in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
But then movies that blew my mind, I'm from the original Star Wars generation. I love sci-fi, fantasy, stuff like that. But the list of actors, man, Don Cheadle in Devil in a Blue Dress. Smoked. If Denzel sees this, I'm sorry, man, but you got smoked in that movie. I mean, Don was just so bad. That drunk scene. You know what I mean? He stands up and his eyes are like red. And I was like, man, I mean, without chewing the scenery, too. So Don Cheadle, Jeffrey Wright. I mean, dude, I mean, there's so many greats out there.
What about Don you, Mike? Who are your inspirations growing up?
Man, I always get asked this question. I never have like an answer for it. I really just be like, I don't know, bro. I don't watch a lot of shit, so it's hard for me to say I have a specific, you know, inspiration. But obviously, you know, I know the great work of Denzel. You know, fucking Samuel L. Jackson, Leonardo DiCaprio, Don Cheadle, like you said, Wood Harris, like people like that. Like I love.
He wasn't in my class, but we were at school at the same time. Wood Harris is insane.
I like Wood Harris. There was a movie called Just Another Day. That was the first time I ever seen him.
Did you see him play Jimi Hendrix?
Oh, I've not seen
him. Oh my God. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's older, but yeah, man.
Jimi Hendrix is an interesting person too. So like that would be fire to see Wood Harris playing him. Hell yeah, I'm gonna watch that.
He and Saul Williams, I don't know if you guys know who Saul Williams is, but he is like one of the biggest slam spoken word poets ever. Used to just go out and tour the New York City poetry circuit live, doing like open mics and stuff. And we would all, the other students who were there at the same time as them, we would go watch them and just, they would just blow people's minds.
Right.
The two of them together, Wood Harris as well. Very good spoken word poet. Mm. Yeah, man. Yeah, it was cool stuff.
So going back on the Mecca being bald thing, was there any other aspects of the character that you talked to Courtney about and was like, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to try this? Or were you kind of like, okay, the bald head, now the head's bald, now let's go into what we're going to do?
I will say that I could not feel in the skin of Mecca until they finally shaved my head. When the hair was off, and I'd never been shaved bald before, and I saw that, I had the kind of like Suge Knight kind of black dyed beard and everything. I was like, yeah, this is that motherfucker.
You were Bolo.
Yeah,
you were Bolo.
I was like, Bolo, right? I was doing a lot of push-ups, eating a lot of pizza. But then, you know, you put on the gorilla pimp fur coat and you see, then you feel all of a sudden, you're like, yeah, this is this dude.
Right.
Sometimes it's different for me. Sometimes it's, it has to come from conversations with Courtney, as you just asked about, and like figuring out, you know, how to work your way from the inside out, just, you know, finding that point of entry on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
With Mecca, it was all the look.
Yeah.
And then the inside followed. The fact that Courtney gave us I think she does this for all the characters on the show, but she definitely did it for me. She gave me a 3 or 4 page treatment before I ever even arrived in New York, which told me the major signposts that my character was going to hit over the course of the season.
Right.
And she left out key ones so that I wouldn't play it during the...
She left
out the thing about, it had something to do with your dad's death.
Insane,
and Lobos and shit.
That
like,
shit is crazy.
Yo,
bro.
That was
when
love.
When we got that script, bro, I was like, yo, what?
Yeah, like,
I was like, yo, what?
And then
this
was,
is the reason?
And, like, then she was like, yeah, and as a matter of fact, if you think about... Kane's first line, as soon as he meets him, he says, "You smell like a narc." Going back to episode one, I was like,
facts.
"Courtney,
that's a
genius."
That's
but at the same time, she's giving you, she's feeding you in terms of like your performance, like so you could prepare. Other than that, I just took it all off the page.
Yeah. What was your first scene? Do you remember?
Yeah, the first scene was in the alley where I come out with the shotgun and break the dude's leg and kill two of them.
That was in Soho. That's actually right on Bond Street, right next to the gym I go to.
That's correct. Yeah. That was the first scene that I got to shoot,
that was
great.
That scene was crazy.
Yeah. We had the one scene.
What was your favorite scene that you shot?
That was close, but maybe that's just because my favorite scene that I got to shoot was when I was, Lil Guap is up in Mecca's apartment, and I'm breaking his fingers slowly while talking to Kane. Like, I do not have time for this shit. There is a power gap in me, and I'm trying to fill in this shit.
They use that in the trailer too. There is a power vacuum
that I am trying to fill.
Yeah.
I was just like, the writing in this shit. And they had the whole, it was crazy. So in a situation like that, what they have is a very realistic looking prosthetic limb. And with fingers that bend back to angles that nothing on the human body should actually bend that far. And then they zoom in on that while you're slowly breaking the fingers. And then they capture you, and try not to do too much with your face while you spit the lines.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, that was probably the most fun scene to shoot.
That's a crazy-ass scene.
Yeah. With the scene with you, man, I was trying so hard to go, but I was nervous, man, because you're the star of the show. And, I had to throw you up against this thing.
Do that shit, man.
I know. And you kept saying, like, no, man. Really? Fuck me up. Let's go.
Bro.
And I was like, oh.
I was like, bro. I'm like, bro, don't worry about it. Like, don't worry about it.
But the dialogue, I thought, flowed quite well.
Yeah,
but that moment of where I had to throw you up against the wall, I was like, man, I don't want to hurt her.
What was your most difficult scene that you shot while doing Ghost?
The most difficult scene.
Because a lot of times people don't realize, like, running scenes, action scenes, like, you're doing that for, like, 8 hours sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It gets exhausting. Like, you're doing that all day long.
Insane.
It would either be the scenes that they shot in the airplane hangar, where, by the way, when they showed me, like, this is, like, Mecca's airplane hangar, and you see the private jet, and I was like, man, this looks like Gianni and Michael Rainey's garage. You know what I mean?
Clip that, Dave. That's one of my rider profile. Clip that, Dave.
What people don't know is that when you're shooting in such a gigantic, wide-open space, the way that they have to do the coverage and stuff, it wasn't that the lines were, difficult,
right.
But it was that you had to hit certain specific marks so that they could see certain areas of the room at certain times. That actually was challenging every time we had to work there. But I can't honestly say I had a day where I was like, man, it was so hard today because it was so fucking fun.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just always fun.
It's such a fun show.
Furthermore, I've also never been on a show that has a 2-week window in order to finish a single 1-hour episode.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't exist. When I heard that, I was like, how did Courtney negotiate that?
Right.
They want you to do it in 7 days, 8 days.
Right.
You know, I mean, less if you possibly can.
Right.
I work on a Monday, I'm off till Thursday. I work the following Wednesday and the following Friday. Got plenty of time to memorize your lines, go to the gym.
Right.
I mean, like, it was a dream job. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, do you have to blow my brains out of the
It's so
couldn't
funny.
You just hang around?
It's so funny because there's a couple characters this season and there's a couple characters from season before. They're always like, it's such a dream job.
Yeah,
like, why
really,
do I gotta die?
It's a good gig, man.
So did you know you were gonna die when you was it in the treatment or did you have that conversation? Or
it was in the treatment by inference. At the end of my treatment ended with like some description of what Monet does in episode 10 and saying that she has to make an impossible choice. And I'm like, of course, she's not going to, of course, Mecca's got to go.
Right. Because you signed a 1-year contract. Right?
Yeah, there was that too.
Right.
They could have re-upped though. They could have, they changed their mind, they could be offering me another one.
Right.
You know. Yeah. Also never really got to work. Yeah, I got to work with Daniel, obviously. I was going to say Daniel Lee Bellamy.
Yep, Daniel Bellamy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great too.
So and Woody. Then
has he been has Daniel been on the show?
Yeah, yet? Daniel came on. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
I missed yeah. his episode.
Yeah.
I missed his episode.
Yeah, he came he was like one of our first like maybe 10 guests.
Yeah, okay. First 10, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's great. So when you were working like do you have any like Mary stories on set or any cuz you guys had intimate scenes, you guys like went like was there anything funny or anything fun that happened?
I would just say my Mary anecdote is very brief. When I went to Florida A&M University, that's the year, my freshman year is the year she dropped What's the 411.
Right.
Okay, so I'm like in my head, I'm arriving to set and I'm singing Love No Limit. And, you know, I'm like all, and I mean, I know all the lyrics, you know, not just that particular album, but all this other. They were like, do not talk to her about her music. She wants to be treated as an actor because right. that's what she said. Don't go up to her fanboying out. And so I'm just trying to keep it together and shit. I'm like,
Mary Jane, wait, who told you that? Was it?
Courtney told me that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And
she'll tell you everything you need to do and not do before you get there.
I texted Courtney and I told her that Mary was coming on. She gave me like a four listing of what not to do. We were like going to do trivia. We're going to do this. She's like, don't do that. Don't do that. I was like, okay.
She's like, she also hates being cut off. I think I cut off like twice. I'm sorry, Mary.
Oh, she does? Okay, see, I didn't know that.
When she speaks, she
that's why I didn't say
off.
One word that whole episode, because that's all I do. I'm like.
Yeah.
We love Mary.
But so I have to say, I was starstruck at first, and then we got into the acting thing, and you know, she's Mary, as you guys probably know, during your process of getting to know her, she can be a little guarded at first until she like warms up to you.
Yeah, gets to know.
And you know, I think that happened after about 3 or 4 episodes, and
yeah,
she definitely was very adamant about what she was not going to do.
Right.
And anytime she opened her mouth, I just got real quiet and sat in my chair until they figured that out.
It's like, what did you do?
Yeah. No, I mean, hey, look, what I mean by that is one of the most powerful and important words that we as actors have is the word no.
Right.
I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that. Right. Or I want to do it this way. So I was taking notes. I was like, man, as soon as I have the juice to be like that, boy, Mary, quite contrary.
I want two coffees in the morning.
No green M&Ms. No, she was not like,
she really is truly the sweetest human being ever.
She's so chill on set. Yeah.
Right.
She's chill on set.
When we were almost done last season and everyone like kind of got together on set, she was bringing a little of her own wine. She was like, boy, we had the best time the last day. She's great.
Yeah.
I love her. I love her.
Legend.
I'll never forget when you brought the lamp truck to set. We was filming behind us in the studio. She's like, oh, so this is how y'all pull it up. All right. She said, don't worry, I'm gonna back up the helicopter next week.
She came up, she's like, this your lamp truck? And I was like,
oh,
no. And she's like, okay.
I'm
like, I'm sorry.
I'm bringing the helicopter.
That would have been
fuck. Yeah. So let's get into some fan questions.
We'll get you
out of here, Daniel. So the first one we got from cat.cav was, what would have been your ideal storyline if you hadn't been killed off? Like, if Daniel Sanjana could write season 3, what would it be for Mecca?
I would have loved to see what we didn't see in the final episode, which is I would have liked to have seen a street war between Lorenzo and Mecca. That might end up with Monet, you know, taking the final shot. We were both, you know, a little confused as to why it wasn't going down like that. And they were like, because then the story becomes about you two as men, and it takes away Monet's agency. So we want her to be the one to finally kill you, because otherwise it's just you guys having a pissing contest.
Right.
So I would have liked to have seen me not die at the end of the first season, for them to spread out more of the drama that they kind of hinted towards in the scene that we did over the course of the next season. And to have it culminate in a big ass street war with me and Lorenzo, that would have been like, we thought we were gonna have like a Vin Diesel, The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, like knockdown drag out fight. Oh man,
that would have been fire. Yeah. Though. I ain't gonna lie, that would have been lit.
So I know this isn't really your call, but in your process, in your mind,
they said the future 12 acts, has Mecca ever ran into Ghost and Tommy in the past?
I would say I would like for that to have been true. He was clearly within degrees of separation. I can't now remember all the details.
He was riding with Lobos.
So I bet you, I'll go. He's been in the same. He's been in physical proximity with them, but he might not have actually met him. Right. He's seen them in person for sure, or been like at.
He's been around.
Maybe he was at the club. You know what I'm saying? Maybe he was at Ghost Club at some night, point or whatever. Night. You know what I mean? Yeah, man. Sleeping, he's moving away. So,
did you, as an actor, this is a me question. As like, what was your process? Did you go, okay, he knew this person, he knew this person? Did you do any of that, a lot of homework before? Me personally, I don't love to get too much into that because it gets too confusing and guarded.
Are you talking about like creating backstory?
Yeah, a little
to make things more specific for yourself.
For Mecca.
I didn't with Mecca, and I'm glad that I didn't because of what it turns out people didn't know at the end.
Right.
Like, she didn't tell me that about my history with Lobos or the connection between that and Ghost Death. So I do think it can help, but I think also you can pull a lot of all you need to know is the event of the scene. I don't want to encourage lazy acting out there, but if you know the event of the scene and you generally know who your character is and you play the truth of the event of the scene is, you know, Johnny does not want to let me drive his Lambo again. Go fix it. The blue one. I have to be clear because there's many of them.
The blue one.
I'm trying to massage a situation where I offer him a favor. That's the event of the scene. You play that honestly. It doesn't matter if you know that your favorite color is, you know what I mean, or that you guys had a fight last week, or you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, no.
I only do that stuff if I absolutely have to.
Yeah.
But I think just.
Yeah, I think I have.
And try to make your scene part or better.
Right, right.
Like if you make it about them, then you're automatically going to be good in the scene, and then it helps them be better.
That is a fact. That is a fact.
That's perfect for the next fan question. _ Kinesha, because we talk about you being a great scene partner and all that stuff.
Oh, thanks.
She literally said, "What makes you a good scene partner?"
Hopefully that. I've had a conversation with somebody whose work I admire, but who shall remain nameless because I don't know if they would consider this to be flattering. Very well known male African-American actor who said that he never lets anybody steal a frame from him. He's competing against you. He's like, because it's like that, dog. And he's like breaking it down for me. And I'm like, whoa, shit. Can we all just create and be friends here?
Right.
But he's trying to beat you when he's in a scene with you. And I was like, wow, you know, I don't know how that would make y'all feel
to get that vibe,
but right. I want to feel like what I'm going to give you what I like want
collaborative.
Myself.
Yeah. I like the collaborative. A collaborative energy, vibe. You know what I'm saying? Like you just said, if you focus on making your scene partner better, you're automatically going to be better
because
you're giving them shit to work with.
Right.
And that shit just is going to reflect. So it's like being against your scene partner, that doesn't really, I don't think you don't really benefit.
It's unless all you're concerned with is standing out in your performance, whether the show sucks or is good.
Right.
And that's, I think,
right.
That's kind of wet.
It's weird because sometimes I will, like, if my coverage is first or Michael's coverage is first, like, a lot of times people will get lazy on their own coverage, which I don't like because it's just, people don't give a fuck, and they're like, I don't kind of care how your thing is. But the way me and Mike work is, like, sometimes I'll even go harder for Mike's coverage.
I'd be like, why the fuck didn't I do this on my coverage? Right. I'd be like, damn.
Right.
I said, damn, that was a good take. I should have did this on the other side.
Yeah. Sometimes you find stuff.
I've been
stuff.
There, too.
And you're like, hold on,
too.
This works.
Right.
And you're like, nah, no way I didn't do this on my coverage.
Right.
Yo, we can't turn back around real quick. Yo, GF, Rob, what we doing?
There is also a thing about measuring your stamina because it's a long day,
sometimes
right?
You can get burned out.
Like, yeah. And so let's say in one of these examples with you and Gianni, it was your coverage first, but you were trying to... Well, actually, his coverage first.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm just saying.
You're right.
You might be holding back something that you know that you don't give at the right time because you're just trying to modulate your shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that is a fact. Sometimes you got to keep something in the pocket for when it's your turn.
In the tank.
You got to keep the reserve tank.
Or surprise him. Like sometimes me and Mike like surprising each other. Yeah. Like something that we didn't do. Like if it's Mike's coverage, I won't do something until it's his coverage, so I can I could surprise him.
And I'll react to that. I was like, what the
right.
That shit works perfectly every time.
Yeah, because it makes it feel fresher.
You find gold in those moments. Right. Like reactions that you wouldn't have gotten.
Yeah,
because
real, genuine, real reaction. It's not Tariq's reaction. It's Michael's reaction. Sometimes you'd be catching me so off guard, I literally would just break from the scene. I'd be like, yo, bro, like, chill. Like, it'd be cool.
I would imagine if there's anybody that can make me break character regularly on set, it would be you.
What?
Bro? Cracking jokes.
Sometimes if we get some in the can, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna make you laugh so hard. But that actually was like early on in, I think it was the episode that 50 directed. There is a scene where Effie comes in and I'm like throwing the money or something happens, and he did like a genuine, like dying laughing, mm-hmm. and they used
yeah,
that
use it, yeah.
for the take.
Yeah,
and I remember a lot of the feedback on Twitter and Instagram was like, wow, that was like a genuine laugh yeah, from right. Tariq.
Yeah, that was
so
a, that was a,
that's
that
kind of where that like friendship and that vibe kept, you know, pulling
yeah,
off of
yeah.
from those scenes that we were genuinely making each other laugh.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Now, was this early in the canon? Was this, when was this? Was this, season
this
one
was,
or is this season
no,
two?
No, this was
Power.
This was Power.
Oh, this was Power.
Yeah, season
yeah.
five.
This is Power.
Yeah, season
and
five.
And I bet
yeah.
you that synergy that they saw yep. in moments like that, maybe not even just that moment, is right. one of the reasons why they got you guys doing so much together.
That was your first.
They know you guys work.
That was your first and only episode for that season, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, season five. I was in 506.
Okay.
And then I did four in six.
Yeah.
Four episodes in
yeah,
season
yeah,
six.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's when Braden and Tariq really started like working together. And mm-hmm. it was so funny because you see Braden come in like Abercrombie in season five. And then legitimately he hangs out with Tariq one time. He comes in with the off-white. He yeah. comes in with the Valentino. Yeah. He's like, what we
that,
doing?
That is good. You guys also, this is kind of out of the swag factor on the show
yeah.
with the drip
yeah.
is just unfair.
Did you say,
everybody is wearing every jacket you saw me wear was $12,000 to $15,000.
Yeah. yeah.
Every the blue yeah. Berluti that shit.
Did you take anything or no?
No. I mean, I guess I didn't even ask. I would have had to probably purchase it. But no, they didn't give me anything.
Yeah. That Mecca shit was crazy.
Man,
them jackets
Kane's drip is insane.
Yeah, Kane's, yeah.
Yo, I'll never forget.
He's always got the black on black LV.
Right.
Yes.
Or even if it's
yes.
whatever, Gucci or right. Dolce & Gabbana.
It's always
like,
black
you
on black.
Only if you look and you see the pattern, you're like, oh, that's some nice shit.
Yeah.
yeah.
This season, Kane's got a lot of crazy stuff. I think I wear Amiri in every episode this season.
Yeah, oh, yeah?
Right. I didn't wear a lot of Amiri season two, but what did you wear mostly in season three?
Season three, I wore a lot of Amiri. I wore a lot of like, what else did I wear? A lot of Amiri, a lot of like.
Tom Brown.
Yeah, Tom Brown.
Yeah.
No, Tom Brown was really second season. I didn't wear much Tom Brown this season, I feel like. I wore like Givenchy,
right.
Fendi.
Yeah, it's cool.
That cool.
What they,
cool,
give, what they do for
evolve.
Him, they give you the sickest color combinations.
yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah,
I understand yeah. now. When you guys are watching the show and there's, I mean, a reason other than the charisma and the beautiful, you know, complexion and all that, the good looks and everything. It's like, they'll make you pop out with the way.
Yeah, the
I remember
colors,
one time
colors,
you had this one outfit on, brother. It was like the jeans, I think, were half black, half white.
And oh, I, yeah.
yeah,
oh,
yeah
Rick
this
Owens
outfit
yeah,
was so
I know,
sick.
Yeah,
I was like,
about,
damn.
Yeah. I know exactly what I've been
and I'm like,
about.
I'm too old to try to rock that shit. I'm going to look pathetic. Like, it just doesn't work for everybody. Yeah, I know my lane. I know my lane.
It's dope because Frank evolves with, like, what's hot right now.
Frank.
Like, Off-White, like, you know, it's still popping, but season six of Power, that shit was popping.
He
so
is
that's
in,
all
he is
Braden
in, Frank is in my phone as Frank Drip Master Fleming. Frank
exactly.
Drip Master Fleming. He thought I was joking. I screenshot
him.
Frank
put me on Drip since I was 12.
Dude,
you know,
man.
Like, Frank
oh, so
guy.
He was back. He was on Power.
Yeah.
I forgot
yo,
about
Frank
that.
Created the whole look of this show. Bro.
Oh,
like,
man.
He
okay.
created that whole, all the fact, like, he created that shit from the ground up. And from season one to
man.
Season six, you could just see how much they trusted him and just kept on giving him more money for the budget.
Yeah, yeah.
Because season one, they were wearing fucking Levi's.
I was wearing, like, I mean, it was still swagged out. Like, I remember being, like, when I was a recording role, I was still a little swagged out. I would have, like, good denim,
right.
good PRPS denim, good Jordans. Like, that was when PRPS was lit back in the day. What else was lit? I mean, not PRPS, Naked Jeans? I think it was Naked Jeans. Those was the denim back in the day. I used to have, like, Tariq had, like, 12 pairs of them, all fire out of jeans.
Yeah.
Every fucking pair of Jordans, 4s, 3s, 2s, you name it. Like,
man.
He was always, like, it was swagged out since the beginning of the show. Frank had us dripped out from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know what, though? And I bet you that the wardrobe budget for this show, for your show, is bigger.
Not naked. Nudie jeans, my bad.
Nudie jeans.
yes.
Oh,
yes.
yeah.
Nudie jeans,
yeah.
yes.
N-U-D-I-E
yes,
or something
yes,
like that. Yeah,
N-U-D-I-E.
That the budget that you guys have for Ghost, I think part of that is also because of the version within the Power universe. Ghost is a very Power Book 2 Ghost is a very specific show.
Right.
It's sexy. It is hood, but
right.
it's also glossy.
Elegant.
It's flossy.
Right.
Now you compare that to BMF.
Right.
They look like they're literally shooting in the fucking hood.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah,
like
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
and there's
fact.
No, it's not glossy, it's not flossy, but it's its own kind of vibe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I bet you that their wardrobe budget is probably doesn't need to be as big,
right?
Because in order to create that, this is a big rich town illusion. Mm-hmm. It has to look like a big rich town. Yeah, it's like, it can't be.
And then like, but then again, you gotta think about them getting all those old pieces too. Like they wear a lot of old pieces that are probably rare as fuck.
You're talking about
like Kanan,
right, dude? Yeah, because it was y'all shit back then. Yeah, because it's in the '90s. Yes,
so I didn't know what BMF show you were talking about. I was like,
I didn't really. It clicked to me after.
Yeah, we don't.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Sorry guys, I'm dehydrated. I don't even know what I was talking about.
When you were on Rescue Me, you literally wore firefighter clothes like every day.
All the time. All the time.
Were you hot as fuck? Like,
dude. Dude, so we would be like, we'd be like, acting's hard. I just don't know what I'm gonna do. Like, we're making money and everything. We're chilling out there in our director's seats and all that kind of stuff. And we're complaining about the fact that we're wearing bunker gear.
Right. Mm.
It's like, yeah. And the real firefighters that were on set that played our background were like, look at us, like, pussy ass.
Real firefighters, they did extra work to while
they were all real FDNY, most of whom had been there on the day of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted there. I think Dennis did that on purpose. He knew that the actors were going
to
want the respect of these guys.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So they would have at least for them to think that we were cool. Like, right. Yeah, they would have to.
They probably would have respected us more if we hadn't been complaining about how hot it was outside.
Was Dennis calling you guys pussies and stuff like that or no?
All the time. He's like, hey, Dan, these guys run into burning buildings in 103 degree heat.
Yeah.
You're mad because you're sitting out drinking a Diet Coke? Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm like, you're right.
It was so funny because when Naturi came on, I said the same thing. I was like, yeah, yesterday was so hot. We were sitting there in like Montclair's. I was like, fuck this. And she looked at me and was like, I am getting a little too fucking, you know.
It's a little too.
Yeah.
You know.
I love you, bro.
Hey.
Thank you so much for coming. We're going to have you on again.
Yeah.
And I think if...
I'm going to be vlogging with y'all. I'm going to come on your vlog.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
We have
a plan. I can't speak on it now. I'll let you guys.
Yes.
But yeah.
100%.
All that. Hell yeah.
Also, Mike is going out of town for like a week. I'm going to go out of town for a week. So we'd love to have you come in and guest host. Cool.
That'd be
like
awesome. Yeah. That'd be great.
Some fun stuff to do. Cool. So plug whatever you have out right now.
It's all it is Echoes right now. We're number one on Netflix. You know, come check it out. It's a limited series, so it's not a movie. You got to scroll down just a little bit. It's also featured. So we love the support.
Number one on Netflix.
He's gonna have an Instagram soon. I'm gonna force him to do it.
Okay. Yeah. And Courtney, number one on Netflix. I'm just saying.
Shout out Courtney, motherfucking Kent.
Yes, come on.
Shout out the Queen, man. Yeah. Courtney Kent.
Courtney Kent.
Well, this. Tycoon will be done by the
way. Tycoon. Tycoon was lit.
Tycoon was lit, man. Oh, man.
Say something about Tycoon.
Tycoon Weekend.
Tycoon Weekend.
It's a 50s festival thing where we literally have a flight tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
Oh.
50 did us dirty with that 5 a.m. flight.
Yeah, nah, but we out, though. We're going
to
be
there. They have a 5 a.m. flight to Tycoon.
Yeah. 50 got
we can't even. We're hitting from outside the club because we can't even get in. And you're over here talking about your 5 a.m. flight
to
Tycoon. Where's the PJ, Phil? Yo, five, we need the PJ next time, man. What's up? Like, what are we doing?
Oh, man.
But,
how long are you gone? Just a week.
Yeah. Probably not even a week. Probably like 3-4 days.
Like, yeah, it's like 4 or 5 days.
Okay.
Yeah. So right now, by the time you guys are watching this, we have just gotten back from Tycoon Weekend.
I am going directly
to the hospital to get fully checked. and then we're back here, baby. So, you know.
Get a little IV drip or something. Maybe some antibiotics.
Yeah. So Mike
depends on what he's getting checked for.
Where is 22 on Instagram, on TikTok, Michael Rainey Jr. on Instagram as well. Y'all go follow me. And yeah, we here. Who has it? G.
Yes, sir. Watch Raising Kanan. It's out right now. The episodes are airing.
Yeah. Go watch the boys.
We want to do more interactive Raising Kanan stuff. They let us. We'd love to, but
work with us.
Work
his
with
voice
us.
Totally changed.
Makai,
it's subtle. He sounds just like 50.
Yo, I was like, literally in the kitchen. I was in the kitchen, my nigga. I didn't even know you was watching Raising Kanan. Like, I walked in from the backyard, and I'm like, the fuck is he watching? It sounded just like 50. I thought you was watching like a 50 like movie or interview or some shit. I'm like, and I go into the living room. I'm like, yo, this is really good.
Little slur.
Yo,
the way he does the mouth and stuff. It's subtle, but it's like, it's different than how we talked in the first
season. I ain't gonna lie, bro. You evolved like a month. That is crazy, bro. Shout out to you, Brody. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Watch Raising Kanan. Season 2. Is it season 2? Yeah, season 2 out right now. I thought it was season 3, but season 2 out right now. Make sure you go watch that.
Yes, sir. Johnny VPLO, everything, TikTok, all that.
Get into a million. The fuck?
We love you guys. Thank you so much. Michael, give us one, baby.
The crew has it, baby. Yes, sir.
The crew has it, and you have it. Thank you, Danny. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate
you. Yes, sir. I tried to show you, bro. I said he pulled up drippy. I'm trying to show you.
I love you, bro. Thank you so much for coming.